Chapter 76. When she went out of the room with Miss Murdstone, no other ladies were of the party. I fell into a reverie, only disturbed by the cruel apprehension that Miss Murdstone would disparage me to her. The amiable creature with the polished head told me a long story, which I think was about gardening. I think I heard him say, "My gardener," several times. I seemed to pay the deepest attention to him, but I was wandering in a garden of Eden all the while, with Dora. My apprehensions of being disparaged to the object of my engrossing affection were revived, when we went into the drawing room, by the grim and distant aspect of Miss Murdstone. But I was relieved of them in an unexpected manner. "David Copperfield," apostrophe said Miss Murdstone, beckoning me aside into a window. "A word." Apostrophe, I confronted Miss Murdstone alone. "David Copperfield," apostrophe said Miss Murdstone, "I need not enlarge upon family circumstances. They are not a tempting subject." Apostrophe, "Far from it, ma'am," apostrophe I returned. "Far from it," apostrophe assented Miss Murdstone. "I do not wish to revive the memory of past differences, or of past outrages. I have received outrages from a person, a female, I am sorry to say, for the credit of my sex, who is not to be mentioned without scorn and disgust, and therefore I would rather not mention her." Apostrophe, I felt very fiery on my aunt's account, but I said it would certainly be better, if Miss Murdstone pleased, not to mention her. "I could not hear her disrespectfully mentioned," I added, without expressing my opinion in a decided tone. Miss Murdstone shut her eyes, and disdainfully inclined her head, then, slowly opening her eyes, resumed. "David Copperfield, I shall not attempt to disguise the fact that I formed an unfavorable opinion of you in your childhood. It may have been a mistaken one, or you may have ceased to justify it. That is not in question between us now. I belong to a family remarkable, I believe, for some firmness, and I am not the creature of circumstance or change. I may have my opinion of you. You may have your opinion of me." Apostrophe, I inclined my head, in my turn. "But it is not necessary," apostrophe said Miss Murdstone, "that these opinions should come into collision here. Under existing circumstances, it is as well on all accounts that they should not. As the chances of life have brought us together again, and may bring us together on other occasions, I would say, let us meet here as distant acquaintances. Family circumstances are a sufficient reason for our only meeting on that footing, and it is quite unnecessary that either of us should make the other the subject of remark. Do you approve of this?" Apostrophe, "Miss Murdstone," apostrophe I returned, "I think you and Mr. Murdstone used me very cruelly, and treated my mother with great unkindness. I shall always think so, as long as I live. But I quite agree in what you propose." Apostrophe, Miss Murdstone shut her eyes again, and bent her head. Then, just touching the back of my hand with the tips of her cold, stiff fingers, she walked away, arranging the little feathers on her wrists and round her neck, which seemed to be the same set, in exactly the same state, as when I had seen her last. These reminded me, in reference to Miss Murdstone's nature, of the fetters over a jail door, suggesting on the outside, to all beholders, what was to be expected within. All I know of the rest of the evening is that I heard the Empress of my heart sing enchanted ballads in the French language, generally to the effect that, whatever was the matter, we ought always to dance, tarala, tarala, accompanying herself on a glorified instrument, resembling a guitar. That I was lost in blissful delirium. That I refused refreshment. That my soul recoiled from punch particularly. That when Miss Murdstone took her into custody and led her away, she smiled and gave me her delicious hand. That I caught a view of myself in a mirror, looking perfectly imbecile and idiotic. That I retired to bed in a most maudlin state of mind, and got up in a crisis of feeble infatuation. It was a fine morning, and early, and I thought I would go, and take a stroll down one of those wire-arched walks, and indulge my passion, by dwelling on her image. On my way through the hall, I encountered her little dog, who was called Jip, short for Gypsy. I approached him tenderly, for I loved even him, but he showed his whole set of teeth, got under a chair expressly to snarl, and wouldn't hear of the least familiarity. The garden was cool and solitary. I walked about, wondering what my feelings of happiness would be if I could ever become engaged to this dear wonder. As to marriage, and fortune, and all that, I believe I was almost as innocently undesigning then as when I loved little Emily. To be allowed to call her Dora, to write to her, to dote upon and worship her, to have reason to think that, when she was with other people she was yet mindful of me, seemed to me the summit of human ambition. I am sure it was the summit of mine. There is no doubt whatever that I was a lackadaisical young spoony, but there was a purity of heart in all this that prevents my having quite a contemptuous recollection of it, let me laugh as I may. I had not been walking long when I turned a corner and met her. I tingle again from head to foot as my recollection turns that corner, and my pen shakes in my hand. "You are out early, Miss Spenlow," apostrophe said one. "It's so stupid at home," apostrophe she replied, "and Miss Murdstone is so absurd. She talks such nonsense about its being necessary for the day to be aired before I come out." "Aired?" apostrophe she laughed, here, in the most melodious manner. "On a Sunday morning, when I don't practice, I must do something. So I told Papa last night I must come out. Besides, it's the brightest time of the whole day. Don't you think so?" " I hazarded a bold flight, and said, not without stammering, that it was very bright to me then, though it had been very dark to me a minute before. "Do you mean a compliment?" " said Dora, "or that the weather has really changed?" " I stammered worse than before, in replying that I meant no compliment, but the plain truth, though I was not aware of any change having taken place in the weather. It was in the state of my own feelings, I added bashfully, to clench the explanation. "I never saw such curls, how could I, for there never were such curls," as those she shook out to hide her blushes. As to the straw hat and blue ribbons which was on the top of the curls, if I could only have hung it up in my room in Buckingham Street, what a priceless possession it would have been. "You have just come home from Paris," said one. "Yes," said she. "Have you ever been there?" "No." "Oh. I hope you will go soon. You would like it so much." Traces of deep-seated anguish appeared in my countenance. That she should hope I would go, that she should think it possible I could go, was insupportable. I depreciated Paris. I depreciated France. I said I wouldn't leave England, under existing circumstances, for any earthly consideration. Nothing should induce me. In short, she was shaking the curls again, when the little dog came running along the walk to our relief. He was mortally jealous of me, and persisted in barking at me. She took him up in her arms, oh my goodness, and caressed him, but he persisted upon barking still. He wouldn't let me touch him when I tried, and then she beat him. It increased my sufferings greatly to see the pats she gave him for punishment on the bridge of his blunt nose, while he winked his eyes and licked her hand, and still growled within himself like a little double bass. At length he was quiet, well he might be, with her dimpled chin upon his head, and we walked away to look at a greenhouse. "You are not very intimate with Miss Murdstone, are you?" said Dora. "My pet." The two last words were to the dog. Oh, if they had only been to me. "No," I replied. "Not at all so." She is a tiresome creature," said Dora, pouting. "I can't think what Papa can have been about when he chose such a vexatious thing to be my companion. Who wants a protector? I am sure I don't want a protector. Jip can protect me a great deal better than Miss Murdstone, can't you, Jip, dear? He only winked lazily when she kissed his ball of a head. Papa calls her my confidential friend, but I am sure she is no such thing as she, Jip. We are not going to confide in any such cross people, Jip, and one. We mean to bestow our confidence where we like, and to find out our own friends, instead of having them found out for us, don't we, Jip? Jip made a comfortable noise, in answer, a little like a tea kettle when it sings. As for me, every word was a new heap of feathers, riveted above the last. It is very hard, because we have not a kind mama that we are to have. Instead, a sulky, gloomy old thing like Miss Murdstone, always following us about, isn't it, Jip? Never mind, Jip. We won't be confidential, and we'll make ourselves as happy as we can in spite of her, and we'll tease her, and not please her, won't we, Jip? If it had lasted any longer, I think I must have gone down on my knees on the gravel, with the probability before me of grazing them, and of being presently ejected from the premises besides. But, by good fortune, the greenhouse was not far off, and these words brought us to it. It contained quite a show of beautiful geraniums. We loitered along in front of them, and Dora often stopped to admire this one or that one, and I stopped to admire the same one, and Dora, laughing, held the dog up childishly, to smell the flowers, and if we were not all three in fairyland, certainly I was. The scent of a geranium leaf, at this day, strikes me with a half-comical, half-serious wonder as to what change has come over me in a moment. And then I see a straw hat and blue ribbons, and a quantity of curls, and a little black dog being held up, in two slender arms, against a bank of blossoms and bright leaves. Miss Murdstone had been looking for us. She found us here, and presented her uncongenial cheek, the little wrinkles in it filled with hair powder, to Dora to be kissed. Then she took Dora's arm in hers, and marched us into breakfast, as if it were a soldier's funeral. How many cups of tea I drank, because Dora made it, I don't know. But, I perfectly remember that I sat swilling tea until my whole nervous system, if I had had any in those days, must have gone by the board. By and by we went to church. Miss Murdstone was between Dora and me in the pew. But I heard her sing, and the congregation vanished. A sermon was delivered about Dora, of course, and I am afraid that is all I know of the service. We had a quiet day. No company, a walk, a family dinner of four, and an evening of looking over books and pictures. Miss Murdstone with a homily before her, and her eye upon us, keeping guard vigilantly. Ah! Little did Mr. Spenlow imagine, when he sat opposite to me after dinner that day, with his pocket handkerchief over his head, how fervently I was embracing him, in my fancy, as his son-in-law. Little did he think, when I took leave of him at night, that he had just given his full consent to my being engaged to Dora, and that I was invoking blessings on his head. We departed early in the morning, for we had a salvage case coming on in the Admiralty Court, requiring a rather accurate knowledge of the whole science of navigation, in which, as we couldn't be expected to know much about those matters in the Commons, the judge had entreated two old Trinity masters, for charity's sake, to come and help him out. Dora was at the breakfast table to make the tea again, however, and I had the melancholy pleasure of taking off my hat to her in the phaeton, as she stood on the doorstep with Jip in her arms. What the Admiralty was to me that day, what nonsense I made of our case in my mind, as I listened to it, how I saw Dora engraved upon the blade of the silver oar which they lay upon the table, as the emblem of that high jurisdiction. And how I felt when Mr. Spenlow went home without me. I had had an insane hope that he might take me back again, as if I were a mariner myself, and the ship to which I belonged had sailed away and left me on a desert island. I shall make no fruitless effort to describe. If that sleepy old court could rouse itself, and present in any visible form the daydreams I have had in it about Dora, it would reveal my truth. I don't mean the dreams that I dreamed on that day alone, but day after day, from week to week, and term to term. I went there, not to attend to what was going on, but to think about Dora. If ever I bestowed a thought upon the cases, as they dragged their slow length before me, it was only to wonder, in the matrimonial cases, remembering Dora, how it was that married people could ever be otherwise than happy, and, in the prerogative cases, to consider, if the money in question had been left to me, what were the foremost steps I should immediately have taken in regard to Dora. Within the first week of my passion, I bought four sumptuous waistcoats not for myself. I had no pride in them, for Dora Ann took to wearing straw-colored kid gloves in the streets, and laid the foundations of all the corns I have ever had. If the boots I wore at that period could only be produced, and compared with the natural size of my feet, they would show what the state of my heart was, in a most affecting manner. And yet, wretched cripple as I made myself by this act of homage to Dora, I walked miles upon miles daily in the hope of seeing her. Not only was I soon as well known on the Norwood Road as the postman on that beat, but I pervaded London likewise. I walked about the streets, where the best shops for ladies were, I haunted the bazaar like an unquiet spirit, I fagged through the park again and again, long after I was quite knocked up. Sometimes, at long intervals, and on rare occasions, I saw her. Perhaps I saw her glove waved in a carriage window, perhaps I met her, walked with her, and Miss Murdstone a little way, and spoke to her. In the latter case I was always very miserable afterwards, to think that I had said nothing to the purpose, or that she had no idea of the extent of my devotion, or that she cared nothing about me. I was always looking out, as may be supposed, for another invitation to Mr. Spenlow's house. I was always being disappointed, for I got none. Mrs. Krupp must have been a woman of penetration, for when this attachment was but a few weeks old, and I had not had the courage to write more explicitly even to Agnes than that I had been to Mr. Spenlow's house, whose family, apostrophe I added, consists of one daughter. I say Mrs. Krupp must have been a woman of penetration, for, even in that early stage, she found it out. She came up to me one evening, when I was very low, to ask she being Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.